donate to this NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loreich. Well, coming up today, we had hoped to have a guest in the studio, but it looks like our guest is not going to show up. So we'll open up the phone lines for this hour and talk about some of the items in the news. We heard that NPR newscast a moment ago, big doings in Washington, D.C. And we could talk about that. There's a lot going on in the last 24 hours. So we're going to open up the phone lines and take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to read some of the stories that we might talk about today, and then we'll see where you want to take it. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Well, in Washington, as we've been hearing, the Senate Judiciary Committee was scheduled to hold a hearing today and hear from a star witness. That was former White House counsel Don McGahn. But McGahn did not appear. President Trump yesterday directed McGahn to defy the subpoena to appear. The committee chairman, New York Congressman Gerald Nadler, has threatened to hold McGahn in contempt of Congress since he hasn't appeared. And McGahn is a key figure in Robert Mueller's investigation into the Trump campaign and the Trump White House. And McGahn says that he'll not be attending the hearing. So now he may face a contempt charge from the members of the House Judiciary Committee. We'll see where that goes. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. It's not the only time that the Trump White House has defied and ordered its staffers or former staffers to not show up for a hearing or not comply with the requested documents that some congressional offices, some congressional committees, rather, are asking for. So we're headed for lots of court cases where courts will have to rule whether or not the White House will have to comply and provide the documents and also provide the witnesses that are being requested by Congress, which does have oversight power over the executive. President Trump's lawyers wasted no time in filing an appeal of a judge's ruling that could lead to Congress receiving years of the president's tax and financial records. Trump's attorneys today filed a brief notice appealing Washington-based U.S. District Judge Judge Amit Mehta's decision yesterday rejecting the president's demand for a preliminary injunction that would block his longtime accounting firm from handing over records subpoenaed by the House Oversight and Reform Committee. The appeal will now head to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, but Trump will need urgent relief from the court since Judge Mehta refused the president's request for a stay. As a result, without a further order from a higher court, the accountants could be compelled to turn over the records as early as next week. Trump's expected stay request is likely to go to a three-judge panel. Sometimes such panels temporarily freeze the status quo while they consider whether a longer-term stay is merited. If Trump can't get relief from the three-judge panel, he could try asking the full bench of the D.C. Circuit Court or make a plea to the Supreme Court. The series of legal steps could unfold quickly, or they could slow down if the D.C. Circuit grants a stay pending appeal and sets a briefing and argument schedule that could be stretched out over weeks or months. So that's one of the stories that we could talk about. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And actually, it looks like our guest is here. So we're going to take a break and be right back. This is WMNF in Tampa. There's music from Oliver Mitikudzi. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And coming up right now, we're going to talk with State Senator Daryl Roussan. He represents District 19 in the Florida Senate. The legislature has just ended its annual two-month session. We're going to get a report from Daryl about what happened at the session. We're going to talk about some of the other issues that have happened. Daryl Roussan's district includes portions of eastern Tampa and Hillsborough County along the bay, and then southern Pinellas County and in St. Petersburg. And Senator Roussan, thank you for coming over to WMNF. Nice to see you.
Very good to be here. Thank you for having me. And I need to thank my employer, Robert Rubenstein of the Rubenstein Law Firm, for subsidizing and encouraging my public service while I'm fighting for you and fighting for the constituents of District 19. He fights for them when they're injured.
Well, that's an interesting place to start, because legislators are part-time, and if you're not rich, you have to have a second or third job in the legislature.
Right? Well, that's to keep us humble.
There's a lot of millionaires in the legislature. Would it be fair to say that you are not among the millionaires in the legislature?
I am not among the millionaires in the legislature.
So you've got to do your legislative job, which is a big job, and you've also got to do your legal job as an attorney.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming by. I want to ask you, this was an interesting session, because we had the new governor and of course the new Speaker of the House and the new Senate president. So people were wondering what direction Tallahassee was going to take this year. One of the big steps they took was to limit Amendment 4. That was the amendment that people overwhelmingly voted for last November, that it would that some people thought would extend automatically voting rights to ex-felons who had served their sentences. The legislature said no. What were your thoughts about what the legislature did about Amendment 4?
Well, I think it was a shame that we obfuscated what the voters made clear. The voters wanted automatic restoration upon completion of sentence except for murder and sexual offenses. I can understand defining murder. I can understand defining sexual offenses. But to I don't think the voter intended for financial barriers to prevent a person from voting. I don't think the voters intended that if a person owes a fine or a fee, that would limit their right to vote or take away their right to vote. And so the evisceration of the voter intent, I think, is what the legislature did.
Do you view the requirement that they pay the fines or fees as a poll tax now?
I would hate to call it a poll tax. That's inflammatory. And for a poll tax, there has to be certain intent behind it to prevent someone from voting. I don't think the judge has that in his mind when he sets a fine, a fee, or a court cost. But certainly, you can say that this is an impediment to a person participating at the most basic level of government, and that's the right to enter the ballot, enter the voting booth and exercise the ballot.
I think the number, and you've got to correct me if I'm wrong, is 1.4 million Floridians right now are being denied the right to vote, even though they've served their sentence.
Yeah, the most in the country. And we think that the voter clearly said, upon completion of sentence, automatic right to vote. No hurdles, no hoops, no things to jump through and jump over, no dances, you know, but just come on out, reintegrate into society, and you will be able to participate in the governing process.
So what are the options for people that support Amendment 4 and think what the legislature did was wrong?
Well, they need to register. They need to try to vote. And in fact, I think the bill that did pass created an amnesty period for those who are not eligible and have registered. In fact, look at what's happening in Tampa. People started registering January 8th. We had a primary and a general mayoral election shortly after that. So some people have voted twice under a mistaken impression that they had an automatic restored right to vote. And that's going to be taken away July 1 based upon this new law.
So the law that limits Amendment 4 doesn't go into effect until 6 weeks from now.
Correct.
So people, you're saying that they should, if they're convicted felons, they've served their sentence, they should register to vote.
Absolutely.
And are we sure there's an amnesty for folks who
Well, some state attorneys have already expressed that they will not prosecute for wrongfully signing the affidavit. But the bill that passed contained an amnesty provision preventing prosecution from January 8th through July 1.
That's very interesting. Well, we're talking with State Senator Daryl Rusan. He's a Democrat. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And the legislative session just ended a few weeks ago, and we're going to hear what his thoughts are on the legislature. We've talked about Amendment 4, which was one of the biggest issues dealt with by the legislature. One of the other issues that the legislature dealt with this time is that they said to local school boards, if you want, you can arm teachers now, which before there's always been, for the last year, there's been a guardian in every school. But now individual teachers, if the school boards agree, can be armed. Tell me what you think of that. Tell me what you think about that.
Well, first of all, many of us in the legislature were there. In fact, I was sitting in committee, K through 12 Education Appropriations Committee in the Senate with Chair Pasadomo as Parkland was unfolding. We were in committee. The children came, to their credit, by the thousands to Tallahassee and shut Tallahassee down with their idealism. They said two things. One, don't arm our teachers. They also said ban assault weapons, and we ignored them. We have now done what they asked us not to do. They wanted us to enforce, encourage, embrace teachers who are there to teach, to inspire, to spark a kernel of knowledge, a hunger for learning. And now we've put them in a position where they have to become judge, jury, enforcer, prosecutor, law enforcement, all in the classroom. And I think it's atrocious. The only good news with that is that it said school districts can opt in. But we know that accidents happen. Guns go off. And I don't understand how bringing more guns to a gunfight ensures the safety of our children. We should be hardening the classrooms.
How do you do that?
You create bulletproof windows. You create more security measures for ingress and egress. You create more surveillance with cameras. And you try to identify perpetrators before it happens.
Yeah, in some schools, there's a discipline issue where students sometimes get out of hand. Do you fear that in those schools where teachers are armed, there's a potential for violence between the teacher and the student?
Not only do I fear that, we could expect that because these are human beings teaching our children. Representative Chevron Jones, to his credit, was very passionate on the House floor when he asked for implicit bias training. That's all he asked for. Every last one of us brings the sum total of our own stereotypical perceptions and thoughts to whatever profession we're engaged in. Teachers are nonetheless. And teachers understanding different cultures of students could mistake defiance for reticence. Could mistake miscommunication as an aggressive or assertive maneuver. And all Chevron Jones asked for was, let's make sure people get training. We do diversity training all the time.
And the legislature, the majority in the legislature decided this was not a good idea. His amendment was not a good idea.
They did. In fact, that's the one, the last bastions that we had to defend against certain bad bills was to file amendments and try and make a bad bill better.
So we're talking with State Senator Daryl Rusan. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Was there a time where students from Parkland went to Tallahassee and expected to be able to speak at a hearing and they canceled the hearing that day?
I don't recall that exactly happening. It wouldn't surprise me if it did. Some legislators are concerned about a circus show in committee rooms. And there are occasions when people come up there to demonstrate like that. But it is at the Capitol. It is there that you engage in debate, engage in protest. You have the right to protest in the Capitol. The students came by the thousands, and they shut Tallahassee down.
How does it feel to be a Democrat in the state legislature where the majority is Republican? And you talked about Senator Jones's proposed amendment, and they didn't say that diversity training was going to pass was a good idea.
Well,
Representative Jones, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm proud to be a Democrat in the Florida Senate.
How does it feel, though? I mean, because a lot of the ideas that Democrats proposed are simply ignored by the Republicans.
You just have to keep getting up. You just got to keep fighting. We're getting ready to go back in September and attack policy, try to fight for the voice of our constituents that are not heard. Sometimes it's frustrating when you try to file good amendments to make a bad bill better, and they don't take them, but it's the process. And there are occasions, and probably more than partisanship, there are occasions when bills pass the Senate floor 39-1 or 40-0. We agree on the majority of bills that come out. It's your hot-button issues, like defining Amendment 4, like sanctuary cities, like private school vouchers, where there's huge debate. And it's supposed to be debated. And in the debate process, we hope good legislation comes out.
This year, the legislature decided to reach into the coffers of the state and offer school vouchers to students. This is the first time they've done it before. It's all been tax breaks from corporations. Now they're going to actually take state revenue and fund school vouchers. What do you think about that?
Well, I support tax credit scholarships. I support the opportunity for children, black and brown, and poor white children to be able to have access to Tampa Catholic and Jesuit and Academy of the Holy Names and Berkeley and Shorecrest and Keswick and Northside Christian and Calvary. I support the opportunity, and that it should not, access to quality education shouldn't be based upon your parents' wallet size or pocketbook size. But I draw the line when you take public dollars, general revenue dollars, and use it for private and religious school vouchers. The Bush v. Holmes said that is unconstitutional. Unconstitutional.
That was a Florida Supreme Court case, or this Florida Supreme Court case that was heard 15 years ago, right?
Right. Yeah. And what we're doing is we're continually draining public schools. You know, public schools will never get better if we don't give them the resources. And resources means money. Resources means services, wraparound services. Children sometimes are coming from toxic home environments, toxic neighborhood environments, and they need services when they get to school. We have them for 7 hours. But I draw the line. Until the Florida Supreme Court rules again, and they probably will, I think FEA is going to be filing suit on this pretty soon. There are those who believe that the three Federalist judges appointed to the Florida Supreme Court will form a majority and overturn Bush v. Holmes, but right now it's an unconstitutional scheme.
What do you say to Republicans who say, this is what they would tell you, we've been throwing money at public schools for years and years and years, some don't get any better, so now we've got to experiment and we've got to take state money now and start giving it to private schools as a way to give parents choice. I mean, you agree with the school vouchers when it comes to tax breaks. Why not agree with the Republicans on the rest of it?
Because it is the constitutional duty of the state of Florida to provide, fully fund, a free, high-quality public education.
You're quoting from the state constitution right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's our duty. Our duty is to provide a free public education of a high quality, and to continue draining resources away and expect it to get better is a non-starter.
State Senator Daryl Rahsaan is live with us, and he's also on Facebook, too. You can find it on the WMNF Facebook page. Blanny Whalen is videotaping this senator, and we're going to take some phone calls from listeners in just a moment. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Another controversial bill that passed this year was the study of toll roads. The state legislature approved, I think it was $45 million, to study three proposed major toll road expansions, one connecting Naples and Lakeland, another extending the turnpike from Wildwood over to the Suncoast Parkway, and the other would extend the Suncoast Parkway north to the Georgia line. You voted for it. Why?
Anyone who saw the evacuations during Irma, during Michael, during some of the other storms and severe weather events, your heart has to go out to the crowded interstates and toll roads. The governors in those instances waived tolls to try to help ease the congestion and traffic. What we did this year does not build roads right now. It creates task forces. And frankly, if the task forces do their jobs, both the environmental and otherwise, this thing will look different when it comes back. And it has to come back to the legislature for appropriation. And that's why I voted for the study.
So the $45 million approved now is not going to build the toll roads. It's going to take billions to build the toll roads, and you've got to approve it as a member of the legislature.
That's right. Yeah.
The environmentalists are really upset. 90 environmental groups signed a letter against the toll roads. The Sierra Club right there in St. Pete says this is the worst environmental decision in more than 20 years by the legislature. You're taking a lot of hits for that vote.
Well, that's what they elected us for, is to take hits, to try to make good decisions that impact the entirety of the state of Florida. These things will be studied, and the Sierra Group is a great group. And if they do their job, if they play their role mightily, then they will influence the outcome.
Yeah, I'm wondering about a lot of people fled during Hurricane Irma north and the interstates were jammed. But I'm wondering about hardening some of our high schools and grade schools and some of our public buildings so that people could evacuate closer to home so that they wouldn't have to flee to Georgia. Are we doing enough to harden existing shelters here in the state?
We can never do enough. We can always do more. But the freedom of America and of the state of Florida is giving people options, giving people alternatives. Those who choose not to stay home, but to go to family members in Georgia or family members in Alabama or Mississippi or South Carolina, they should have an alternative, safe method of travel. And that's what this does.
State Senator Daryl Rahsaan is here, and this is WMNF in Tampa. We're live. If you've got a question for us, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. Here's an email from David. I'm just going to shorten it. Would you support moving the state capital to Orlando?
I think many of us who live far away would support that. You know, every now and then, I think that they made Tallahassee the capital location on purpose because they knew it was hard for people to get there, and so it would keep folks away. I live 3.5-hour drive in South St. Pete to Tallahassee, and I'm probably one of the cheapest legislators in Tampa Bay because I never fly. I always drive. It's a great opportunity to think and reflect on where I'm going and what I've done when I leave there and come home. But I think a centralized location for my members who come from South Florida, Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach County, even Monroe County in the Keys, they might like a more central location.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Fort Myers. I mean, for Miami and Fort Myers, it's got to take almost 8 hours to get up to Tallahassee if you go by car.
That's right.
Yeah, and Key West, it's almost 12 hours or even more.
Right.
You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. State Senator Daryl Rahsaan is here, and we're going to take some phone calls from listeners. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Before we go to the phones, there's a national issue I want to ask you about, and that is that the Mueller report found out that the Russians did try to hack into two counties here in Florida and were successful in hacking into at least the initial stage of the voting, the voting offices in two counties. Those counties have not been named publicly, but the governor got a briefing on it a week and a half ago. All of our congressional delegation got a briefing on it, but everybody's being mum about it. Nobody's saying which counties were hacked. Now, the Washington Post and Politico are reporting that it was Washington County and maybe Sumter County, but we don't have that officially. Are you sure that our voting systems here in Florida are safe from penetration by the Russians or anybody else that wants to hack into those systems?
I'm reasonably sure. I know that precautions have been taken. We have a great group of supervisor of elections that are very concerned about hindrance-free elections. But I think for transparency and accountability, the public ought to know what counties those were and what steps are being taken to do so. And I would urge the governor and the congressional delegation to advise us appropriately.
Surely the Russians know, right? I mean, they know which counties they hacked. It's those of us that are voters here in Florida that don't know.
Yeah, maybe President Trump can have that conversation with Putin.
813-239-9663 is our phone number. And let's take some phone calls from listeners for State Senator Daryl Rahsaan, who is live in the studio today. Let's go to Shepard, who's in Tampa. Shepard, thank you for calling in. What's your question?
Well, I have a few comments. First off, I'm an independent, not a Republican or a Democrat. I voted for Amendment 4. Why? Because my God is a God of second chances. I fully believe in that. And I know about criminals because my brother did 2 years in the federal pen for counterfeiting. That was all they could get him on. Now, as far as making these felons pay back their court costs, I'm all for it. And as far as I'm concerned, if I am robbed, let's say one of these thugs breaks into my home, steals my TV, my laptop, my jewelry, takes from me, then they need to make restitution to me. Now, let's say my insurance company paid me for all this stuff. Great. That felon should then have to pay restitution to the insurance company. And don't give me any of this left-wing garbage that the insurance company has millions or billions of dollars.
Well, right? Shepard, let's pause it right there, and we'll let you continue. But right now, Senator, do you favor ex-felons paying restitution for the crime they commit?
I do.
Yeah. So
but
you're already there.
I favor a payment plan. I favor judicial waivers in some circumstances when it may be beyond one's capacity to or competency or ability to pay large restitution. So there ought to be alternatives like community service. And there ought to be an opportunity for a person who is a victim and is owed some money to do forgiveness. Just like this caller just said, there's some victims that will forgive. And in those instances, the person ought to. We're talking about the right to vote and how we block that right through financial exactions from our people.
So, Shepard, let me go back to you. Would you be okay with a payment plan if somebody still owed restitution?
I would be okay with a payment plan, but I'm not okay with, well, they can't pay you back, so they don't have to. And how does community service help me? No. Let me put it this way. You might remember there was an old TV show, an old crime drama. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. No, don't do it. Now, listen, I came from a family full of criminals, as I told you. My brother was just among them. And I'm going to lead into something else. You talk about these kids who are going to private school versus public school. You know, you talk about coming from a disadvantaged family. I got news for you. Compared to my family, the Adams family and the Munsters were normal. I mean, my family put the dis in dysfunction, and I did okay. Now, let's put it this way. I believe fully in state money going to families to send their children to any school they want. To me, it is no different. Now, that's a public education. The state is merely contracting with a school to educate their children.
All right. Well, Shepard.
Hang on.
No, well, Shepard, we want to. Shepard, I'm not trying to cut you off. We just don't want you to bogart the whole show. I think you've made two fine points, and let's discuss those points, if you don't mind. Is that okay? Shepard, thank you. And you made two great points. Senator, would you respond to him?
Sometimes no response is necessary.
Okay, Shepard, thank you very much for making those comments. We've got every line lit. Everybody wants to talk to State Senator Daryl Rosson. Let's go to John, who's south of the Skyway. John, thank you for calling in. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, how you doing? First, I'd like to say I'm glad to hear you and not Craig Kopp today. I'm a high school public teacher. I've been doing it for over 30 years. I've been at school day after day, week after week, year after year, decade after decade. And I got to tell you, man, Armin school teachers just makes my stomach cold with just unease. I'm fortunate that my county opted out. But if my county embraces Armin teachers, my strategy is I'm going to buy a Kevlar vest and I'm going to wear it to class every day and just try to force the issue through that.
John, what's the worst that you fear? Let's say your school district did say that teachers could be armed. What's the worst that you fear, having been a teacher for so long? What's the worst outcome you fear?
Well, I want to tell you, that it was less than a week ago that we did our last active shooter drill. And during my time, there was only one day when I thought I may not come home, and that was the day that they had a SWAT team surrounding the buildings around school, and a man had just murdered somebody in the community, and they thought it was come to the high school to murder some people over there. And arming teachers is, I mean, I love these people. I work with them. I respect them. But I don't want them armed. There's really nobody over there that I know, and I've been there a long, long time, man, that I would trust in a crisis situation. I feel there's more, kind of like the old football cliche, when you throw a pass, three things can happen and two of them are bad. I just don't see the teacher standing tall in the saddle and ending the situation. I see worse things happening, and that may just be fear that, that's coming from somebody who's been there for 30-plus years.
All right, John, thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Sure.
Senator, would you respond?
Well,
you respond?
I agree with him, and I'm very concerned, and I don't think 140 hours of training qualifies a teacher to put themselves in harm's way like this.
Dennis Baxley, the state senator from Ocala, says, look, in my district in Ocala, sometimes from the school district to the police department or the sheriff's department is 20 minutes. That's what he says. Ocala and his county is so big that's why he wants armed teachers in the Ocala area.
Well, there may be distinctions for rural versus urban areas, but the point is still the same. Teachers, by and large, want to teach. That's what they want to do. They don't want to make a decision that law enforcement's trained through an academy more than 140 hours. They don't want to make that kind of decision. And children don't want to do that either. Children want to feel like they can approach their teacher to ask a question, to talk about information. And with anxieties and depression being high amongst kids these days because of high-stakes testing and other things that go on in the classroom, we should make it more welcoming to them.
Let's go. John, thanks for your phone call. Let's go to Terry in Bradenton. Terry, you're on with Senator Rosson.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question, Terry?
Well, I love what the teacher had to say. I've got two children that are teachers, and they basically said the same thing. Teachers are not wired that way. I have two issues. If there's time, if there's not, that's fine. The most important one is protection of the school children. And I'd like to say, Senator, I've heard the first few words on the radio. I thought you were Andrew.
Thank you.
But you are a very intelligent person. I love everything you've said. Sometimes I post things on Facebook, liberal things, and it's funny. If I post a picture of my dog, I get 1,000 likes. If I say something political, nobody responds.
All right. So, Terry, you want more protection for students, if I'm hearing you right. And so how would you do that? I mean, the Republicans who favor arming teachers say this is protection for students. How would you do it as a liberal?
I'm going to support what the senator has already said. Any military tactical person, we're talking commanders, higher-ups, dating back from current times back to the Calvary. What did they do back in the days of the Calvary? They put their vulnerable citizens in a little town. They built a wall around it, and they called it a fort. They had a gate. They had four guard towers. They had trained military personnel. A modern-day gate would also have a metal detector. That's my thought. It's one of the things I've posted, and nobody's even put a single comment out there. Am I nuts?
No, you're not nuts, and I agree with all of that. We should be concentrating on hardening schools. We should bite the bullet, pay the expense to put a school resource officer in every school and allow these schools to be made more safe. Even allow some flexibility for rural school districts to do a little more as opposed to what we might do for urban districts. But it's all about keeping the children safe.
All right.
Terry, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. Senator, do you support, I mean, all the talk since Parkland has been pretty much about putting guardians in schools, arming teachers. There has been very little discussion about doing something about the availability of guns. Do you have any idea? I mean, do you think that there are too many guns available to too many people?
I think there are too many guns available to too many people. I think the wrong people are getting access to guns, and I think we need to ban assault weapons, weapons of mass destruction and not of protection. Along those lines, though, we also need to worry about the mental health of our children. Some of these people who are committing these offenses and getting access to guns have some mental health issues. While Parkland was unfolding and we were in committee, we were commending Chair Pasadomo for doing increased spending on mental health of students, $40 million. But we almost doubled that to $70 million after Parkland and gave school districts some options. We need to be able to identify students that are suffering from depression, from anxiety. I saw something on the national news last night, a hope program where children in middle schools are being taught to self-identify.
A school board member from Hillsborough County last week was at a press conference where the governor and his wife were speaking in East Tampa. And she interrupted the press conference and said that schools in Florida are not spending enough money on mental health. And the governor kind of put her down, told her to stand down and not ask her a question. But from your perspective, did the legislature do enough in the last 2 years to provide aid for the school districts to provide for mental health counseling and other needs?
No, they have not. And her point was a good point. The governor didn't tell her to stand down. He just said to her, what's your question? Sometimes those of us who are in elected office would like people to get to the question as opposed to building the clock. What time is it? But she made a good point, and I commended her for her courage. The next day at Tiger Bay.
You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Sarah writes in. She says, build hurricane shelters, not more roads for developers. She's opposed to the toll road system. Thank you for that. Clark in Ybor City writes, John Morgan, the attorney, challenged Andrew Gillum, who ran for governor last year, to use his leftover campaign funds to set up a fund to pay Amendment 4 fees and the cost for felons. How much would it take to cover the fees and costs for former felons to vote under the new law?
Well, if you find out what it costs, that'll be the first appropriations request I make when we get back to Tallahassee.
State Senator Darryl Roussan is here. This is WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Dan, who's in Tampa. Dan, thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Well, I have a few points to make. Number one, armed teachers. I don't know if people realize that they watch too much TV out there, Rob. When a police officer and them go in and they pull their weapons and start shooting, I believe that they actually hit their target less than 30% of the time. And these people are well trained, supposedly. So I don't know where they think a teacher with 140 hours all of a sudden is going to be like Cool Hand Luke and be just standing there while someone's shooting at him and just start capping at him. That's ridiculous. What we should be doing is harden the classrooms, the doors and such, and that kind of, that'll work way better. And as far as the felons go, I heard that one gentleman talking about if they can do the crime, do the time. They did do the time, you fool. Now you want them to pay extra on that. Does this mean that anybody that owes a fine or is late on child support, are these people also going to be restricted from voting?
Well, let's hope not. I do not believe the voter intended for finances to prevent someone from voting.
I
believe if this had been explained fully to them, they would favor payment plans, waivers in some extreme cases, alternatives like community service, which are all ways of being accountable for the crime you committed.
And one other point I would like to make. When you said that they almost doubled from $40 million to $70 million for mental health, that's the most laughable, Senator. It should be closer to about $800 million to $1 billion for mental health for your school systems in this state as big as it is.
Well, I agree. We lost 5,700 Floridians in 1 year, 2016, alone to the opioid epidemic, the addiction crisis that this state has been going through. Hillsborough and Manatee counties were epicenters of the overdose deaths.
They could have used some money. I was reading the paper today where they took $284 million out of the housing fund that was supposedly set up years ago to help for affordable housing.
Well, that's
taken over $2 billion, is it now, since 2000?
I agree with you that we need to throw more resources at the epidemic, at the addiction crisis, and at helping children with anxieties and depressions and mental illness. I agree that we need to do more. How much more is the debate?
Nothing more will be done, Senator, until these people are voted out. And I cannot understand it personally.
Well,
nothing changed up there. Every time we have voted for an amendment, for God's sake, they have turned it around on us. We wanted the clean water, so we said it for this, but now they're talking about building water plants over there instead of what we wanted the money for. We did the medical marijuana thing. Every amendment, for some reason, that we have put on the books, they have just kicked it sand in our face, and I don't know how in the hell they get away with it. We can't take them to court and win.
All right, Dan, thanks a lot. Thanks for your points. There is that frustration out there that voters feel like their will has been ignored over and over again by Tallahassee. And you're not the problem. The problem is the majority that votes to sweep money out of the housing fund or to put up hurdles to Amendment 4 or to not spend money on land conservation. I mean, over and over again.
Take out your frustration in the voting booth, on the ballot, every chance you get.
I want to ask you, State Senator Daryl Rahsaan is here. I know that you one of the causes that you have championed is trying to get people who have had problems with traffic, traffic tickets and all that. Sometimes their licenses are taken away, and that makes it hard for them to commute to work. I wonder, was anything done this session about making it easier for folks to get to work and not have their licenses revoked?
For the first time in years, Senator Jeff Brandis and I were able to move the needle on criminal justice reform. We came as close to passing an omnibus, comprehensive criminal justice reform package than we've ever come. It included requiring judicial circuits, to have reinstatement days, annual reinstatement days. You may remember in St. Petersburg when the chief judge declared Mount Zion Progressive Missionary Baptist Church as a temporary courthouse. We got the judges, the state attorneys, the public defenders, the sheriff's office, and we had two of the Flowmobiles, Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles, sent their driver's license vans. We expected 300 to 400 people to come out. 2,000 came out.
That's how big the problem is.
That's how big the problem is. So this year, we were able to get move the needle on driver's license reinstatements and on new reforms for suspension. We were able to take away certain crimes that were non-driving related that got your license suspended before. Now it won't get your license suspended. We were able to reduce the felony charge to a first-degree misdemeanor if you're caught driving while license suspended. That will help reduce the 791 state prisoners that are in prison that we're paying $30,000 to $40,000 to feed, clothe, and house on a driving while license suspended charge.
That's their worst crime.
That's their worst crime.
Wow. State Senator Daryl Rosson is here. This is WMNF in Tampa. Suzanne writes, I have many animals and I live in a floodplain. I've had to leave five times with my animals for hurricanes. I've also found a friend on high ground to take us in. I suggest that people that want to go to Georgia, they leave earlier. That's what they should do. I also agree with Rob. We need to offer more shelters in the Tampa Bay area to free up the roads. The new toll road will destroy animal habitat and will only make the billionaire who owns that property in Taylor County richer, writes Suzanne.
Yeah. So to the environmentalists, to the ones who care about their pets, wake up, show up, work with these task forces, make sure your voice is heard, your concerns are addressed, and at the end of the day, when it comes back to the legislature for appropriation, be sure you're counted.
Let's take some more phone calls, and we're going to go to DJ in Tampa, who's been holding for a while. DJ, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, great morning, Ron. This is Mel, man. Taking it in. Hey, I got a great afternoon, Senator Rosson.
Thank you.
2 points. Okay, so I was just recently graced to be in the courthouse and before a judge. And the judge eerily said before my case, a Seminole casino case came up, and he stopped. And he said, well, didn't they just stop providing us with funds? And now everybody was in like a panic because the judge said straight up out of his mouth, if they cut us off with funding, then we're not going to prosecute any more of their cases.
I'm not familiar
well,
enough with that.
I know a little bit about this. The Seminole,
we was receiving funding from Seminole.
The state of Florida received up until this year about $350 million a year in state funding. But because no gaming deal was reached in Tallahassee this year to, you know, supervise card games and other things, possible expansion of gambling, the Indians, under their agreement with the state, cut off $350 million to the state coffers. So the judge was acting like a legislator there, or like a...
Yeah, he was serious. He was like, well, if that's the case, we're not going to prosecute any more of the cases. Anything coming from the Seminole Hard Rock Casino, we're not prosecuting it. And yeah, that's eerie now. Just wanted to put that out there.
This was a
and
judge somewhere in Hillsborough County, huh?
What is it? I have to look up his name real quick. It was so quick. Yeah, it's judge in the Hillsborough County Courthouse right there on Twig Street. Mentalities right now. The Amendment 4 and the medical marijuana initiative were both two good initiatives, but shams. Because the medical marijuana, and I am a recipient of the card, but I had to pay $200 for the card, $200 for an eval, $75 for a card, just to be told that I have to come back every 7 months and pay another $200 to keep the eval status, another $75 every year to keep the license valid. And then on top of that, I do not qualify because I'm a medical marijuana recipient. I can't get a legal firearm. And this is facts that's in your paperwork when you sign your life away to get on voluntary probation.
All right. Well, DJ, thanks for making that statement. The senator's been taking notes as you've been telling him this. Senator, would you like to say anything back to DJ?
Well, we want to do everything we can to make it less costly for people to access their medicine.
Okay. Ron writes this, I respectfully disagree with the senator's agreement to vote for the toll road study. This is the same as approving the toll road, writes Ron. He says economically and environmentally, they're a bad idea. Our many voices saying no were ignored by almost everyone, and I feel disregarded by these so-called representatives. That's Ron, who's out there in cyberspace.
Well, I appreciate the fact that he took the time to email that and exercise his right to be vocal.
Kevin is asking us, is the legislature raising the threshold to pass an amendment to 67%? Do you know?
There was an attempt to put more restrictions on petition gatherers, circulators, that would include criminal penalties if the signatures weren't handed in a certain time, prohibitions against paying people per signature as opposed to giving them an hourly wage. This bill did pass, and I don't recall all of the...
Yeah, I don't think the 67% threshold passed.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah,
they were making it harder, though, to try to amend the state constitution.
Yeah, of the three ways, the Citizens Initiative is the most pure in terms of its grassroots expression of what the people believe. The other two ways is through the legislative process, when you need two-thirds of each chamber to vote for language, and the third way is through the Tax and Budget Reform Commission or the Constitutional Revision Commission. And by the way, of the 37 people on the Constitutional Revision Commission that will not meet for another 20 years, I was one of three Democrats, and I was the only Democrat to get an amendment through the Constitutional Revision Commission on the ballot and approved by the voters, and that was retroactivity of Amendment 11.
And what did that actually do?
Well, it allowed the legislature, what passed was a slightly watered-down version of what I wanted to pass, but when the legislature changes a criminal sentence, it must expressly state its retroactivity, and that's what passed.
So if you change the laws on crack cocaine and powdered cocaine, that would go back to the... years.
Yes.
Even though the crack
cocaine... If the legislature says so.
Crack cocaine sentences were higher than powdered cocaine sentences.
Right.
That would be one example.
Right. But but the legislature must be explicit when it says it.
Let's go to... we're going to go to Glenn in Bradenton. Glenn, you're on WMNF with Senator Daryl Russon.
Thank you for taking the call, Rob. We're running out of time, but as far as the driver's license, my philosophy is no victim, no crime. End of story. A waste of taxpayers' money. The other issue is the hardening of schools. Here in Manatee County, we passed a bond issue, $120 million to build a new high school. And we all thought it would be hardened to hurricane standards. And lo and behold, it was not. And before the first shovel was turned, I asked the board to do that. And they said, oh, no, it's an extra 7%. Well, they're already over that in overcost. So it's a slap in the face to the citizens. Had the voters known that new high school in Parrish would not have been hardened, that bond would have never passed. And, my third issue is the Sadowski Fund. Put Rob and Peter to pay Paul. Statewide, we have over 75,000 homeless students in the state of Florida, 2,000 right here in Manatee County. And if those Sadowski funds were available, we could be putting roofs over these homeless students.
All right, Glenn, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments.
Well, ever since I served on Tax and Budget Reform Commission back in 2007, 2008, appointed by then Governor Crist, I've said that if it's a trust fund, then the money should be used for what it's held in trust for. Otherwise, we need to be honest with the people and call it a maybe fund. It might be used for what we tell you it's intended for. We need to stop raiding these funds and allow them to be used for the purpose for which they're gathered.
And there are tens of thousands of people on the waiting list locally for Section 8 housing. We have a shortage.
Well, housing is at an all-time crisis in the Tampa Bay area. I mean, all you got to do is drive downtown Tampa or drive downtown St. Pete and look at the apartment units being developed and built, and you wonder how these people can afford $1,200 for a 600-square-foot apartment that's a studio.
It's a big issue. State Senator Daryl Russon, thank you so much for coming by WMNF today. It's great to see you.
Thank you very much, and thank you to Robert Rubenstein.
Daryl Russon represents District 19, which covers portions of Hillsborough and Pinellas County. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning. This is WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Loray, and here's the news from